That is good news, Greg. Thank you for you and the team leading us in worship. Great encouragement to be reminded of that, right? In the midst of these difficult times, God's not finished with you. God's not finished with us. He's got good things in store for us as He continues to do a good work in your life. Well, happy Labor Day weekend. Great to have you here as we continue our series talking about rhythms for healthy souls. And today we're going to talk about our labor, our work. And so welcome, whether you're joining me in person or welcome those of you who are online. And thanks, though I can't see you, you can see me. But I am looking forward to seeing you in 2 weeks at the block party out in the parking lot there. And we got some great food trucks coming. In fact, this week when Steve announced which food trucks we've got, for each food truck he mentioned, two of the staff would go, yes, you know, yes, you know. It's just, I realized again, we all have our own food preference. Everybody's a foodie in some sense, right? We all got our own food preferences. So look forward to seeing you in person, even as you watch the services online. And thank you to our camera operators who are doing a great job each Sunday. And if you'd like to step into that, it's a really simple role. Just contact Greg. So let's talk about our work, our labor. You know, there was recently I heard on the radio, it said 40% of North Americans would like to find a different job. You know, it speaks to the difficulty we're finding ourselves in now. I mean, so many heart attacks happen on a Monday morning as the work week begins. Sadly, so many suicides happen on a Sunday night as people anticipate the new work week. And sometimes we have this desire, this wish, this prayer. Oh, Lord, help me to win the lottery, you know? Because then we can, you know, sing that song, you know. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. And anybody know who's the songwriter, singer for that song? Ironically, Johnny Paycheck was his name, you know. And, you know, we have that kind of desire, you know. Or we wish to be called to something, right? Something more spiritual, something more satisfying than what we're doing. Because let's face it, after our life at home, we spend the most amount of hours at work. And so we want it to be fulfilling. And there's a widespread myth in the Christian church about this idea of calling or being called. And sometimes it, you know, it shows up when, let's say, a pastor calls a couple onto the stage and then says, we are commissioning this couple to go to Africa as missionaries because they have been, quote, called into full-time vocational ministry. And then the person sitting in the pew says, oh man, I wish I had a calling like that. I guess I'm just in the Plan B group. There's no word from God for me. I just got to go back to my job, whether it's on the shop floor, in the office, or whatever they find themselves doing. But friends, I'm here on this Labor Day weekend to tell you that's not true. There is no Plan B. Prior to the Protestant Reformation, the church used to talk about this idea of a calling. Calling to be a priest or a nun or a monk. But then when Martin Luther nailed the 95 thesis on the Wittenberg door and the Reformation began, that division between the clergy and the laity was knocked down. And we talk now about the priesthood of all believers. And Martin Luther, in his work on the priesthood of all believers, did not call every worker to be turned into a church worker, but rather every kind of work was to be seen as a sacred calling. Your work matters. 1 Peter 2, verse 9, I put on your outline, it says, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. That's a word for all people. All people are prophets, spokesperson for God. All people are priests. All people are ambassadors for Jesus. There's not just a special calling for certain people, those of us who, let's say, work at the church, you know. As sometimes people have said to me, oh, you're paid to be good, you know. Well, What does that leave you? You know, good for nothing? You know, it's sorry, that came out wrong. You know, we all have this calling, right? It's not a question of whether you're called. It's, we're all called. It's what we are called to and how we are going to live out that calling, because there is a caller and there's a callee, and that's you. Every work is a sacred calling. And I'd encourage you to see your job as more than just an economic exchange. And yes, you got to get a paycheck because rent is due on the first of the month. You got bills to pay. But it's more than just climbing the corporate ladder. It's about contributing and participating in God's mission in our world. There's an old school word, the word vocation. Everybody say that word with me, vocation. It comes from the Latin word voca, which means to call. That all work, all labor is a sacred calling. In the beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we have God creating. That word create is probably used a dozen times at least in those first two chapters. And whatever it means to be made in God's image, part of that must include our calling to create. It's what we do in our work, in our schooling. We glorify God in our jobs. So I would say, don't try and put a hyper-spiritual spin on that. Because sometimes we can take the word Christian, and we can, which is used as a noun in the New Testament, and then we turn it into an adjective. And we say things like, oh, if only I worked for a Christian business or had a Christian job. Well, there are Christians who work in business. There are Christian people who do jobs. It's never used as an adjective. But we have this idealism. You know, let's say it's like the barista who works at Starbucks who's a Christian, and she thinks, oh man, if only I had my own coffee shop, you know, or, you know, what would I call it? And she's looking at the Starbucks sign and she thinks, oh, what if there was a period between the T and the A? Saint Arbucks. Ah, that would be a holy calling, you know? Or the person who works at a funeral home and says, oh, you know, if only it was called Resurrection Funeral Home, you know? Then I could talk about Jesus, you know? Or let's say the waitress at a restaurant thinks, oh, if only I had my own restaurant, you know? What would I call it? You know, not like this chain restaurant I'm in. Maybe it would be called the Garden of Eat-In, you know? You know? Or worse, you know, a sales, life insurance salesperson. We think, oh, if only I somehow could slip in. What about buying, you know, or what about your interest in, you know, life after death insurance, you know? We don't have to be cheesy about it, right? We don't have to force Jesus into conversations. Jesus is already there in your school, in your workplace, and he has called you. N.T. Wright talks about every Christian being like a 45-degree mirror, reflecting God in various environments, including a work and school environment. We don't create the light. We're kind of like the moon that reflects the light of the sun. You reflect the light of Jesus, the sun, in your workplace. See, the Bible is filled with people who worked in what we might call secular jobs. See, everybody in the Bible worked. Like, you either worked in paid labor or unpaid labor. Every person. You were either, you know, out in the fields, or you were, you know, preparing a meal, or you were washing clothes down at the river, or you were, you know, doing whatever. Everyone worked. And the heroes in the Bible, they all worked these, quote, that's quote, right? You do air quotes like that, or is that bunny's ears? Bunny's ears, I don't remember which way it goes. But, you know, what we might call secular jobs. Isaac was a real estate developer. Jacob was a rancher. Joseph was a government official. Moses was a sheep herder. Esther went into government work. David worked in the animal care and military. Daniel was a prime minister. Lydia worked in the textile industry. Paul was a tent maker, etc., etc. And perhaps the ultimate expression of how much God values work is seen in his son Jesus. That Jesus worked as a craftsman, as a tradesperson. The Greek word that's used there for his labor is the word tekton. Everybody say that with me. Tekton. It's from what we get our English word technology. That Jesus was a tekton. And the word includes the ability to work with stone, masonry, and wood. So Jesus spent 3/4 of his working life fashioning tables, benches, being a bricklayer. Jesus, in a sense, was a construction worker. You say, but then he got called into full-time ministry. Really? Was he not always in full-time ministry? That the calling to do stonework and carpentry for a building is just as vital as his calling to preach and to teach? That the calling to build tables just as crucial as the calling to heal people? I want us to look at a passage in the Bible this morning. It's the first person who's mentioned the Bible as being filled with the Spirit. Chances are you've never heard of this obscure character. And so I invite you to turn with me to Exodus chapter 31 as we read a few verses about him. And I'm reading a fair bit now about what's happening in the rest of the world. And I got to admit, friends, I'm encouraged. Because like this passage, it's obscure people. Not the sage and the stage. It's people who don't have an Instagram or Twitter account who are doing incredible things in what we now call the majority world around the world in terms of movements of God at work. And that may be the shaking that God is doing in his church, particularly in North America, that the book of Hebrews talks about. In the days ahead, it will be ordinary people doing extraordinary work for God. People like this guy. Exodus chapter 31. Let me read the first 5 verses there. Then the Lord said to Moses, "See, I have chosen Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God, with wisdom, with understanding, with knowledge of all kinds of skills, to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze, to cut and set stones, to work in wood, and to engage in all kinds of craft." Oh God, as we consider our own work, our own schooling, our own hobbies today, I pray that you would take your written word and speak it into the calling each of us have. We have hearts ready to hear from you. In your name I pray. Amen. Okay, so we've got this obscure character there, Bezalel, and it mentions his family lineage there, and the fact that he is the first person with the Spirit of God mentioned in the Bible. It's not a prophet. It's not a priest. It's not a king. It's this tradesperson who has the skill that comes from God. It says there, "See, I've chosen," that indeed he had this calling from God. And he sounds like a multi-talented guy, right? As he works with this variety of medium, that he works with both wood, works with precious metals, gold, silver, and bronze there. He also does stone work there, it's mentioned. He engages in all kinds of crafts. And we read there that the Spirit of God enabled him to do the job with, verse 3, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. That he had wisdom. That this gift to understand what Yahweh was calling him to do in the fashioning of the temple that he would be working on. Or that he also had understanding, or some of your translations say discernment. That no doubt he's got to make decisions as he's working away on the wood or on these precious metals. There's complexity involved in it. And thirdly, there in verse 3, that he's got all kinds of skill. That the master's hand was guiding his hand in accomplishing the labor that God had called him to. Bezalel. His name means shadow of God. That's a great way for you to think about your work, your schooling. As a shadow of God. 4 thoughts about your work. Number one, to view your work as service to God. Colossians 3:3 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. There in that verse, it's got the name of your boss. Did you letter name, starting with the L, Lord. Jesus is your ultimate boss. Now, it's easy to forget that, right? We lose that in the daily grind. When our human boss, you know, wants that report ASAP. Project manager is on her case for something, you know, or we have a cranky coworker, or the office politics at the job, or it's easy to forget Jesus in the midst of that. Or when we have a job that's just kind of mindless repetition, like this one employee at Disneyland who worked on the Jungle Cruise ride. You know the ride? You've been on it? How many have been on the Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland? Yeah, many of you have been on that ride. And now there's a movie about that ride, isn't there, out there? You know, on that ride, if you haven't been on it, it takes you through this riverboat adventure through, you know, Africa, South America, Asia. You remember how long the ride lasts? It doesn't last that long, right? And in fact, that's the most common question that employees are asked at Disneyland, you know, who are, you know, working at a ride. How long does the ride last? And so on this particular ride, the correct answer is, quote, the Jungle Cruise is an exciting adventure ride that lasts 10 minutes, quote. And that's what you've got to say dozens, hundreds of times each day. Well, there was one employee who was tired of saying that line. And so there's a couple in line. They came to the front of the line and said, how long does the ride last? With complete poker face, he answered and said, the Jungle ride lasts 3 days. They got out of the line. They went back to their hotel. They checked out of their hotel. They were on their honeymoon. They took a carry-on bag along with them, got back in line, got on the ride. And were they ever surprised when after 10 minutes the ride ended? Now the next day, guess where that employee was? He was no longer working for Disneyland. And there was a new employee who answered any customer's question with, the Jungle Cruise is an exciting adventure ride that lasts 10 minutes. And sometimes when we've, you know, got a meaningless, what feels like a meaningless repetition in our work, it wears upon our souls. We don't feel like we've got a vocation or a calling. Serving God in our job, that just seems like a lifetime away. And sometimes when things do wear too much upon our souls, that can be a sign from God. Hey, I'm moving you on. Because let's face it, not all jobs last forever, right? You know, it's kind of like a layover at an airport. You know, you're not going to hang out there for years and years at the layover. You're ready to catch the next plane. And perhaps even now, you know, God's calling you to something different. Get your resume ready. More importantly, get your character ready. And work your current job with that Colossians 3:23 attitude that whatever you do it as working for the Lord, and get ready for what He calls you into this next season. Maybe even you want prayer for that at the end of this service. But to continue working your job as service to the Lord. And to be remembering that you don't get your identity from your job, right? You don't get your identity from your past job, your present job, or your future job. That's an easy vortex to get sucked into, isn't it? I mean, you meet somebody new, right? What's one of the first questions that you ask them? Well, what do? You ever find yourself kind of judging people based on their response to that question? What do? You ever find in your mind you get like a pecking order of what that person does in relation to society? Or do you ever get an answer like from somebody and you have no clue what that means? You say, well, what does a typical day look like for you? And then they give you like a 1 minute answer and you still don't have any idea. So you just say, well, that sounds interesting. We can easily evaluate, judge others based upon a job or a job title. And that's a dangerous trap to fall into. Madonna, the singer in Vogue magazine, said this: "This is what my music is about. Every time I accomplish something great, I feel like a special human being. But after a little while, I feel mediocre and uninteresting again. And I find I have to get past this again and again. My drive in life is from the horrible fear, of being mediocre. And I have to prove to myself and to others that I am somebody." Friends, I remind you today that if you believe the gospel of Jesus Christ, your identity comes not from what you do or don't do. Your identity comes from you as God's beloved child. You are His son, His daughter, and He is already well pleased with you. So you don't have to try and prove that or earn that. You're ultimately looking for the approval of Him, not the approval of your boss as much, or trying to get your identity from what you do, but be set free from that. And go to work. Go to work, not just to get a paycheck, not just to get a promotion, but because you're working for the Lord. And then you get your work ethic from that sense of mission. So as you go back to work after Labor Day tomorrow, or you go to school for the first day after summer holidays, go with that sort of an attitude that you're here to serve the Lord. And then secondly, find the sacred in your work. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." As I said, there's no secular jobs in God's eyes because God is omnipresent. The doctrine that God is present everywhere, in your school on the first day, when you're back to work, that God is not only present there with you, but He's involved with you in some way. It's not a fluke or an accident, the job you're at. God is there with you. See, your boss may have hired you, but God's hidden hand was involved. So whether you're a plumber or a pastor, you have a sacred calling. And I mention those two professions because they have equally stinky situations that they deal with. Your vocation is sacred. And so that means, number three, approach your work as a worshiper. Worship doesn't just happen here Sunday mornings at 10, but it happens as you're at school, as you're at work. Approach it with that attitude of worship. Now, we don't, of course, worship our work, but we worship God in and through our work. Three people were working on a project. Somebody came up and said, "What are you doing?" The first person says, "Well, I'm mixing concrete." Second person says, "I'm building this wall." The third person says, "I'm building an office tower for the glory of God." It's having that attitude of, I am here at school and at work for the glory of God. If you go with that attitude of being a worshiper, and that means, fourthly, keeping your eyes open to look for God in the ordinary. Martin Luther said work was the mask of God. This idea that God is hidden in the marketplace, that God hides Himself in your school and in your work, that you and I have to open our eyes to see that God's kind of like the kid, the little kid who's hiding behind the curtain, that, you know, we know that they are there. That most of our week involves what we might call mundane activities. We go to work. We go to school. We drive the kids to soccer practice. We run errands. We make supper. We clean the bathroom. You know, but in the midst of the mundane, the ordinary, God is there. And as we look for Him, it invites us to posture ourselves to be more near to Him. And so, friends, look for God in the ordinary. It means approaching our school and our work with a prayerful attitude, a thankful attitude, and a watchful attitude. A prayerful attitude. God, how can I serve these people? How can I serve you as I go about my work? A thankful attitude. God, I'm grateful that you are my ultimate provider. Thank you for this job. Thank you for this school that I attend. Thank you that I can be a light in the midst of this negative environment. And then a watchful attitude. What's next, Jesus? Where are you at work in the midst of my school, my job site? God is always there. Let's listen to two workers on this Labor Day weekend talk about labor. And so one is a Grace Pointer, the other is from the 17th century. So let's take a look at the video.
Hi, Grace Point. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Mark Suey. During a Grace Point Sunday service last month, everyone was given a piece of clay to shape into something that represents one of their spiritual pathways or connections to God. For me, I find joy and a sense of God's presence in my hobbies, particularly working on my project car. And that's why I shaped my piece of clay into this wrench. I think my passion for car building was given to me by God, which is why I sense God's pleasure when I'm tinkering away in the garage. And I really came to understand this when I look at my own kids and their hobbies. So our son is really into origami and doing computer animation, and our daughter's really into reading books and writing stories. And even though these are things that I'm not interested in, I take great pleasure in seeing them get fulfillment from their God-given gifts.
Thank you, Mark, for that. And to find fulfillment in our hobbies, in our job, in our schooling, recognizing that God has made each of us unique. And Mark's wrench was quite unique. That's why I reached out to him. And his son made this paintbrush, Cameron. That was awesome what you had done. Each of us have this calling, and we are to do it for the glory of God. And so whether your hobby is turning a wrench or whether your job is turning a wrench, do it for the glory of God. Whether your hobby's at a keyboard or your work is at a keyboard, do it for the glory of God. Another worker, Brother Lawrence. He was a dishwasher in the 1600s in a monastery in Europe. And this is what he wrote in his book, Practicing the Presence of God, which I believe is a free book that you can get online. And here, 400 years later, we're still talking about his attitude. This is what he said, quote, "The time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer. And in the noise and clutter of the kitchen, I possess God as in great tranquility as if I were on my knees." Quote. I love that. Here he is in a monastery, the dishwasher. But he says, I sense God's presence, whether I'm slaving away there on the dishes or singing psalms in the chapel, that God is equally present in both. And friends, may it be true for you also that we reach up to God because God, first of all, reached down to you. So to consider as you go back to school, go to work this week, as you engage with your hobbies, that God is there. And that you experience Him because He created you. And not only created you, but He redeemed you through His Son, Jesus, who gave His life for you and desires to live in relationship with you. So I invite you to take the communion elements that you were either given here, those of you who are joining us online at home, to take your bread and cup, whatever that looks like. When Jesus was with his first disciples, he took the bread and he passed it around. And he said, "This bread represents my body that is broken for you." Let's just take a few moments of silence. Consider this Jesus, your provider, in all aspects of that word. Amen. I invite you to take the bread and to eat. And then Jesus took the cup when he was with his disciples, and this said, "This cup represents the new covenant between God and humanity." Friends, take and drink. I'll invite the worship team up on the stage. Those of you who are watching, stick around to the end as I commission you into your marketplace, into your schools, into your hobbies, that you will sense God's presence. Whether your labor involves working at a keyboard all day, or you're working with your hands in a physical job, whether you're writing papers this semester and opening textbooks, or you're taking care of children, wherever and whatever your labor looks like, that we serve God, realize the sacred calling that he has given to us, and we look for him in the midst of it.